morning. Last week, we went through the Seder HaYerusha, going to do a brief chazara, and then we're going to discuss the Halach L'maisa, how it plays out today. As we discuss, if a person dies, a husband is Yerusha's wife, he receives everything. The reverse is not true. If a man passes away, his wife is not a Yerush, she does not receive any chelik of Yerusha. A person's sons yarsh are his first yarshim. A bechor gets pishnayim in certain assets. We'll discuss next week which assets he does get pishnayim and which he does not. But otherwise, the assets are split between his sons. Daughters do not receive any chelik of Yerusha if there are sons. If there are no sons, the daughters yarshin everything. Now, in any case, if a son or a daughter predeceased the parents, then their children step in their shoes. So if a person had three sons, one of the sons died before him, so that the grandchildren from that son would step in the son's shoes, and collectively they would receive the share that the father would have received if he was alive. If a person dies without any children or grandchildren, his father is Yerush him. A mother is not a Yerush. Yerusha always goes through the father's side. If the father had also passed away, then it goes to the father's Yerushim, which is the deceased's brothers or nephews. If there are none, it goes up a generation to the grandfather. If the grandfather is no longer alive, it goes down to the grandfather's Yerushim, which is cousins, etc. And you keep on going like that until eventually every Yid will have a Yerush. If you have to go up to the Shvatim, you go up to the Shvatim. But eventually, every Yid is related to someone else, and there is a Yerush somewhere. The only exception is a Ger will lav dafka have any Yerushim. And there the halacha is, if a Ger passes away without any Yerushim, the Nechasim are all Hefker. A Shtuki, someone who was born out of wedlock, where his father is not known and was never known, also the halacha is the Nechasim are Hefker, similar to the din of a Ger. Now this is all Meker Hadin. Let's spend a few minutes now discussing the halacha l'maisa, what really happens when a person passes away. Now, we mentioned before that a wife is not a yerush. She does not receive anything from the husband's estate. Now, legally, a wife is a yerush. Even if you try to cut her out, she generally, there is some statutory minimum in, I think, all states. So, legally, the Dina Lachusadina certainly says the wife has to receive something. In halacha, the wife is not a yerush. She gets nothing. When you have such a case, where there's a conflict between the law and Hilchos Yerusha, so it is very clear, we'll discuss it by Rikos in a future shiur, but it is very clear that we do not say dina d'machusa dina when it comes to Yerusha. And when it comes to Yerusha, we will follow the Seder HaYerusha. We will follow the kedimos that the Torah that halacha sets. And if a person does not do so, if a daughter or a wife decides she wants to take what she's legally entitled to, even though al pi halacha she's not, so it's considered straight out gzeila. It's straight out theft. Halacha in this case does not recognize dina d'malchus adina. Now that being said, if you learn through Hilchos Yerusha, it sounds like the wife gets nothing. For a number of other reasons, the wife ends up very often with a very sizable share of the estate. And there are two basic reasons for that. The first is that we all know there's a concept of a ksuba. When a person gets married, he writes a ksuba. And what a ksuba is if you think about it, it's really a prenuptial agreement. It's a contract that sets out the husband's obligations to the wife. Now, one of the obligations are that if they get divorced or if the husband dies, he has to pay her the 200 zuz. Now, 200 zuz is not a huge amount of money. Again, there are different shitas, but $25,000 is probably a typical shita. Certainly, a wife, if the husband dies before the wife, she is entitled to at least this amount, not al tayorish, but simply because she has a ksuba, she's entitled to this one-time payment. However, the halacha is that although when a person dies, the wife can claim the ksuba, the halacha is if she does not claim the ksuba, she has the right to be supported by her husband's estate until she either remarries or claims the ksuba. So until she asks for the ksuba, she's entitled to mezainis. She's entitled to support for her food. She's entitled to live in the house and to use the utensils, whatever the clay habayis were, whatever she used while her husband was still alive. She's also entitled to medical expenses. Any refuah de'in le'kitzvah, any medical expenses which it's not a flat fee. I mean, today virtually everything is de'in le'kitzvah, where she gets sick and you don't know, there's no set cost to treat her. It's you go to the doctor, you get different treatments, different medications. So this is a refuah de'in le'kitzvah. So until she claims her ksuba, she's entitled to that. She's also entitled to the amount of shifchas, or today would probably be cleaning help. So she's basically entitled, the husband's estate is liable to pay for her support and upkeep until she remarries or until she claims a ksuba. Now in many cases, certainly if a person with a more modest estate, it'll come out that the bulk of her assets over time will go to the wife for her maintenance. If she gets remarried, she loses this. But at least until she gets remarried or until she comes to Bez and asking for the ksuba, she's entitled to all of this support. Now, although she will get all, she'll be entitled to support, she'll be able to live in the husband's house, the one thing that she cannot do is, she cannot just give away assets. Very often, if a husband will die, and assuming there's no will, if there's a will, that's we'll have to discuss that later, but assuming there's no will, so al pi halacha, the Yerusha should all go to the sons. Legally, again, much of it will go to, or all of it will go to the spouse. But what we're saying now is that regardless, even though the sons are the Yerushim, they have to pay all of their mother's expenses, which was basically all of her living expenses, whatever her standard of living was while the husband was still alive. But what she cannot do is, she cannot start giving away her husband's assets. She can't, you know, some svarim or some or family heirlooms. If she wants to give it away to her enekloch, she wants to start giving it out, mechayim, that's a problem, because it does not belong to her. So Bishlam, what she needs to take for herself to support herself, what she's entitled to based on her ksuba, that she can do. But to start going ahead and start distributing things, personal items, and giving it to children and to grandchildren, it's not hers to give. And this would be a problem. Now, this is another very good reason why a person should write a tzava, a person should write a will. Because otherwise, if a person dies without a will and his wife has everything, it's a very uncomfortable situation. The children, the assets belong to the children. If the mother gives it away without permission, she's really stealing from the children. And it's just very uncomfortable. If the children know about it, they realize the halacha, they're not going to want to confront their mother. So typically what they'll do is when they realize there's a problem, they'll all get together and they'll basically just agree. We know it's ours, but we're giving it all to our mother. We're giving her the rishus to do what she wants to in her lifetime. But if there's any tension in the family, or even if they don't realize, and they don't realize to do this, and the assets are given away, al pi din, the children afterwards can go to whoever received anything. They can go to the grandchildren, whoever got things from the grandmother, and say, this belongs to us. She had no right to give it away. So, it's hard to say there's a mechila because more often than not, people just don't realize this halacha. We actually had a din Torah once where a family came to a din Torah. It was a few brothers. All of them had learned in yeshiva and had learned in koil for a number of years. And the din Torah involved, their father had passed away approximately 20 years earlier. There was no will. The mother took everything. They had gotten it, they had done some estate planning about 10 years after that, you know, with the mother, and they had gotten into a fight at that point. They made a certain pshara. Again, the fight is not important what the details were. But they came back, it was just 20 years after the father had passed away, 10 years after they had made a settlement with the mother's estate, they came back and the din Torah was some of the children claimed that when they made the pshara, they had no idea that the assets belonged to them. They didn't realize that the sons were Yoyrish and not the wife. Now, what's interesting is I happened to have been in yeshiva with one of them, and we learned Yesh Noichlin. But to connect Yesh Noichlin to what happens when your father passes away, unfortunately, there's a big gap between the two.
How does that all work? It requires people
You never need to come to Beis Din. As long as everyone's on the, as long as the Yerushim are on the same page, that's certainly what normally happens. Then you have a problem. The bottom line is there's a chiv of kibud av ve'em. So putting aside whether you know the dina yerusha, you have a chiv to take care of your parents. Again, kibud av is mishalav or mishalem. But the obligation is to take care of the parents, putting aside Hilchos Yerusha. If there's disagreement in the, you know, in the family, I can't tell you what to do. But
is she entitled to all this? She's a second marriage and they've got children. And they were married for 6 months or something.
Irrelevant. When you the chiyuv ksuba of to support your wife is regardless of how long they were married, regardless of if there were children, she's entitled to support regardless. So,
one quick question. What you're saying now, as far as legality versus the other, is that
a part of the joint accounts? That's the second point we'll get to. Very good. So the first point is that putting aside Hilchos Yerusha, there's a chiyuv ksuba to support a wife, and therefore she's entitled to, in a more modest estate, she's entitled to a very significant amount of the estate simply to maintain her lifestyle, her medical expenses, until she remarries or until she claims her ksuba. No. I mean, the Yerushim do get it. We don't set up a trust. The Yerushim do get it. Bezin sells, if they have to sell off assets, I think it's 3 months or 6 months. It's a limited amount at a time. But otherwise, the Yerushim do have the assets. If they sell it, you have problems. No, it's the whatever lifestyle, whatever mezonos she enjoyed while the husband was still alive. It's not bare minimum peanut butter and jelly. It's whatever she was used to while the husband was alive. Well, that's not a question of lifestyle. That's very likely refuah. If she needs medical care, that's a separate halacha. Any refuah day in lekitzvah, which I think today would be virtually everything, would be covered. I'll the chi of refuah. So this is the first point, the chi of mezainos, and that is a very significant support. The second point is let's talk a little bit about how the bulk of most people's estates are. So the simplest in halacha is, what happens if the husband had a life insurance policy? The life insurance policy either named her as a benefit, or if there were no stated beneficiaries, but legally she's entitled to it. Would she get the benefit, or would we say it goes with the Seder HaYerusha? So here there's a very interesting discussion among the Poskim, and what the Or Sameach and others say is like this. Yerusha is if you own something. You own a house. Or for that matter, you lend someone money. So there's a debt that's owed to you. So if a person passes away, his nechasim go be Yerusha. And his Yerushim, his children, whoever the Yerushim may be, will all get their share in the house and the debt, whatever asset it was. When a person has a term life insurance policy, so there's $1 million death benefit. Did the life insurance company owe him $1 million? No. Kol zman he was alive, they didn't owe him a penny. He bought a policy, which meant that Achim may have asked me after he died, they would pay to this amount to his beneficiary. What? Well, it's certainly not while he's alive. While he's alive, he never had it. So therefore, what Paiskim say is, just like there's an Or Sameach that says, Minigea Koifer, that since it's something that you only owe the person after he's dead, it's never owed to him, so the concept of Yerusha doesn't apply. And therefore, certainly if the wife is a beneficiary of this policy, so it's not something which comes into the din of Yerusha. It's something which is only kicks in after he dies, and therefore whoever it kicks into, whether it's a stated beneficiary or whether legally this is the beneficiary, she would be entitled to it. Okay, when you say buying a policy, is what you mean is they're willing to pay him to change the beneficiary. paying someone to pay it to change the beneficiary is not the same thing. It's not an asset. You know, it's if a person has a house. So the moment before he died, the asset was worth X. It could be the moment he died, it became worth more afterwards. But it's the asset itself that goes birusha. Over here, the person would pay him to change who the beneficiary is. When the person dies, that policy is, or that right to define a beneficiary is gone. It's closed. The person who's getting it is because whoever the beneficiary at the time of death gets this money from the life insurance company. So that's why what the value, the fact that you could have taken money to change a beneficiary before he died doesn't mean that the money that's received later is that money. It's not. It's not the same asset. It's not the same money. So therefore, in such a case, if a person has a term life insurance policy, whoever the stated beneficiaries are, whatever the rules or the legalities are, that would govern, because the concept of Yerusha does not apply to a debt which only exists after death. What? I'm talking about a term policy because whole or universal has some sort of cash value or surrender value. I'm still not convinced. It's very possible it'd still go birusha, because when a person dies, I don't think the cash value goes birusha. I think at that point it becomes a death benefit. But I've spoken to a number of brokers. They all have different spins on how it works. So I'm going to try to stay out of trouble. Yes, the ksuba is it's two different things. It's not. So that's the first point. If there's a term life insurance policy, that would not go with the Seder HaYerusha. That would go to whoever the stated beneficiaries are. Now, the next question is, what happens if a person has a bank account, brokerage account, and it's a joint account? So when a person dies, who owns the assets in a joint account? Now, this case is a little bit different than the life insurance. Because life insurance, the point was, it was never owed mechayim. The death benefit is only payable la'achar misa. Here, there's money that the person earned while he was alive. He deposited it into an account. So over here, at one point, it was clearly his money. If it's his money, it should go with the Seder HaYerusha. That being said, there are a few points to consider. The first is that when you put money in a joint account, who owns it? So there's a husband and there's a wife. There are two bits. It's owned jointly. In the very, there's clearly, there is a partnership between the two people. Before that, rights of survival, we'll get to in a minute. Even before rights of survival, it's just a joint account. If they would have it without, so if it's a joint account, they're both partners in this account. Now, it's not necessarily a 50-50 split. It could be it's a joint tenancy in common, but clearly there is a shutvis. They have equal rights, and therefore she has at least a 50% right to this money. Dari Mastavra. Mechayim, if she would go ahead and she'd cut a check from this account, she'd be able to spend this money. So if she's able to spend this money, if she has rights to it, mechayim, so arguably at least 50% of it would not be totally in the Dine Yerusha. 50% is very likely would be hers. And that, again, with nothing to do with Ochus Yerusha, she's entitled to it because it was probably given to her mechayim. Now the next point is that very often there is when you have money in a joint account, there's rights of survival. Now rights of survival is a little bit of a different question, because although we mentioned before that we do not apply dino malchus dino to the Seder HaYerusha, the fact that legally the spouse may be entitled to the Yerusha, if al pi halacha she's not entitled, then she will not get it. Rights of survival might be a bit different, because rights of survival b'dineihem is not a din of Yerusha. The pshat is not that if you're on the account with rights of survival, now you're the Yerush. The pshat is that when there is an account and it's a POD or there are rights of survival, it passes to that person by operation of law. It's not a din of Yerusha. It doesn't go through probate. It doesn't go through the normal Yerusha channels. It might be part of your estate for tax purposes, but it's not a Yerusha concept. The reason why they get it is because it is a joint, there's a rights of survival, it's a schus, it's like an acharecha. If you give something to someone and you say acharecha l'ploini, that after you die, the asset should pass along to a third party, that's not Yerusha, you're not making that person into a Yerush, it's a kinyan. You have a kinyan in it that when one person dies, your kinyan is completed and you will have it. If that's the case,
what's the rights of survival actually? What does it mean?
It means that whoever dies, who the last survivor, keeps the entire account.
If they're
on the account with rights of survival. Not every account has. It's usually you can check if you do want rights of survival or not. But an account that has rights of survival, whoever the last survivor keeps everything. Correct. Normal shutvis, when one dies, his yarshim step into his shoes. This is a unique kind of shutvis. So if you... What? That's money that's owed, right. Exactly. That's certainly not yours. It's something which the government pays. That's their rules. That certainly wouldn't have yours. That's life. That's more similar to life insurance, which certainly would not go with Seder HaYerusha. Okay, good. That's you'll have a separate issue with Mezoinos. Who gets the Mezoinos? Mezoinos. That's for Nebuchadnezzar, sure. But anyway, so going back to this point, if their rights of survival, it is very likely that the rights of survival is not a din of Yerusha. That's a kinyan that you have now. It's like an acharecha. It's passes by operation of law. And therefore, it's very yitachin that a joint account with rights, or any account with rights of survival, it's very likely it would belong to whoever the benefit, whoever the survivor is, regardless of who the halachic yoyrish is going to be. Now, this would apply also to, or similar would be any POD account, where there is, even if it's not a joint account, but if you designate that upon death it's payable to a third party, you would also have a similar argument. Again, there are technical issues with kinyanim, with avi kanani, if it's a bank as a goy, but that's not for now. Now, there's a tshuva from in Chidushei B'Shleima, in the Chelek Aleph, and in the back of the sefer, there are a number of shaylos of tshuvas. So in Simen Ches, he says a fascinating svara. He's dealing with a similar case. There was money in a bank account. It was not a joint account. I don't believe it was there were rights of survival either, but the bank was going to give it to the spouse because bidinehem, those are the laws. That's who the bank has to give it to. The problem is bidinenu api halacha. The Yorish was not the spouse. The Yorish is the sons. And the question is, can the wife accept the money from the bank? So Rav Shlaima makes a fascinating cheshbon. He says like this. If a person has a house, and for some reason the house and the person dies, so in halacha the house belongs to the son. If the wife goes ahead and takes and says, I'm taking the house because I have legal rights, so she's a gazlan, she's stealing the house, and al pi halacha you can force her to give it back. When a person puts money in a bank, so when he deposits money in the bank, what's he doing? He's lending money to the bank. Now this bank now owes him the money. He passed away. So pi halacha, we follow the Seder HaYerusha. The bank now owes the Yorshim the money. The Yorshim send a hazmana to Citibank and say, come to Beis Din, we believe we're entitled to the Yerusha. The bank obviously ignores the hazmana, doesn't come to Beis Din, and says, we're not paying. So we have a situation where the bank owes the Yarshim the money, but they're not. The bank refuses to pay, and the Yarshim have absolutely no way to recover that money. Now, on the side, the bank goes ahead. They take the whatever money that they owe the Yarshim. They think they owe it not to the Yarshim. They think they owe it to the spouse. And therefore, they go over to the spouse, and they hand her $100,000. This is the money that we owe you because you're the legal... Because you are the Yorish, you're the legal Yorish. If the wife accepts the money, is she stealing money that belongs to the Yorishim? No. Al pi halacha, the same way you had the right to bring Citibank to a din Torah and say, as a Yorish, you owe us the money, not to our mother. If the bank goes ahead and pays the wrong person, you still have the same claim in a din Torah. You can still bring the bank to the din Torah and say, you owe us the money, we're the Yorshim, pay up. So when the mother, when the spouse accepts the money from the bank, she's not stealing money from the Yorshim. It's not that money. What's happening is there's a bank that really al pi halacha owes money to the Yorshim. They're refusing to pay. Instead, they pay the spouse. But it's not the same money. It's not a tangible asset, which the mother is taking the house that belongs to the child, she's taking it for herself. It's you have a bal choyv that's saying, I'm not going to pay the person who I owe, I'm going to pay a different person. So Shlaima suggests perhaps there's nothing wrong with her accepting that money. Now, this is a chiddush, and you also, there's the concept of shibud derub nasim, that what really comes out is like this. What comes out is that the money that the spouse took, she really owes the bank back. Because had the bank realized that they really owe it to, or they're going to have to pay it to the Arshim, then they wouldn't have given this to her. So if she owes it back to the bank, and the bank owes money to the Arshim, perhaps it's shibud derub nasim. Shibud nasim is when one person owes the second owes the third, so the first and third can make a direct claim. What? Oh, so by goy it is a machlokes. By goy there is machlokes. There's a tome that says that in this case that it will work because, but it is machlokes. But many places do apply it by a goy. So Shlomo deals that. We'll get back to Hashem Tzavei soon. That is a good point. That is a good point. But the problem over here really is that how you mesh of the aveda. Let's say she would say, "No, I'm not taking it." Are the Yerushim going to get it? No. So if she does accept it. So if there's a physical asset that belongs to them, once she gets it, there's a chiyuv hashavas aveda. But since it's not that, it's money. And it's money that the bank is paying her, not to them, what makes this money the money that's owed to the sons? The bank, no matter what, is not paying the sons' money. So the fact they're giving it to her is not hashavas. This aveda does not belong to them. Give it some thought. Oh, very good. So we'll get to that in a minute. So anyway, so based on this, Reb Shlaima has this chiddush that whenever you're dealing with a debt that a goy owns, he says, for technical reasons, that whoever they're willing to pay it to would be able to accept it. Now this is all by a spouse. So what we're coming out with, just to summarize, is that the wife is entitled to support. She's entitled to life insurance policy. She's entitled to at least half of the house, possibly more if there's some sort of rights of survival, and bank accounts as well. It is, again, at least half and possibly the entire account if it's joint or if there are rights of survival. Now, what about a daughter? Now, a daughter, we mentioned, is not a Yerush. If there are any sons, the sons get the entire Yerusha. Certainly, if there is a life insurance policy that names the daughter as a beneficiary, or if there is some sort of account, you have the same discussion that we had before. In the absence of anything, what the daughters are entitled to is they are entitled to support until they become a begeres, which is 12 and a half, or until they get married, whichever is first. They're also entitled to a nedunya when they get married. It was normal and customary when a woman got married, when the parents would give a nedunya. There's no set amount. Again, the default is 1/10 of his assets. But again, it's not a set amount. But we are Meshayer. There's not out to the fee of Ksuba, but we're Meshayer how much that the father would have wanted to do this. And therefore, Chazal or Mesakin, that when Yisleima gets married, you give her a Nedunya from the husband's estate. Now, that being said, this, as you can imagine, caused many serious machloksim. People passed away without a will. Legally, the daughters are entitled to their equal share. Al-Pi Halacha, they're entitled to either nothing or virtually nothing. And very often, there was a machlokes. So there are a number of tshuvas that are written about it, and there's another cheshbon that we have to go through. And that is, what happens when a person passes away without a will? So what happens typically is, it has to go through administration. It has to go through the courts. This has been true for many years. And the problem is that it's true that in halacha, the daughter may not be entitled to a yarish, to yarshin anything. But b'dineihem, she is entitled to yarshin. So how do you deal with a situation where the assets are locked up in court? They're controlled by an administrator, they're controlled by a civil court. There's no way to get it out without the court's approval. And the courts are not going to approve any distribution if the sons and daughters are not treated equally. So over here, the issue is that al-pi halacha, the daughter is not allowed to take anything. But what the daughter can say is like this. It's true, I'm not a yerush. And I'm not going to ask anything. I'm not going to court. I'm not going to sue you. No, I'm keeping quiet. But you want to sell your house. You want to sell the house. You can't sell the house until you get clear title. You're not going to get title until the government until the administrator signs off, until the courts are satisfied that the estate was taken care of appropriately. The only way to get that is if I sign a waiver or I write a letter that I'm okay, I'm waiving my legal rights. I don't want to do that. Can you force a daughter to sign a waiver if she doesn't want to? So here there's a whole discussion among the Paiskim. Some Paiskim say, there's a chiva shavas aveda. Here you're dealing with a hard ass, you're dealing with a house. The house, al pi halacha, belongs to the sons. The sons can't get the full use out of it without a waiver. So they say, midina shavas aveda. Just like if a goy came and held a gun to your head and said, you can't use this asset until someone signs off. Salta shavas aveda, in order to allow the person to have the free and unencumbered use of the house, you would force them to be meshav aveda. So many Paiskim say you can force the daughter to sign, and that's it. She has to sign a waiver. However, a number of Paiskim argue. There's a sugya where a person bought something in the name of the Reish Galusa. He bought a property. He was worried that people would start up with him. So he put the property under the Reish Galusa's name, under the king. That wasn't the king, but it was the Reish Galusa, the head of the head of the Jewish community. He figured he was a powerful and well-connected person. No one was going to start up with him. That's what he did. He put it under his name. But a number of years later, he wanted to sell it. Now, he can't sell the Reish Galusa's property. So at that point, he went to the Reish Galusa and said, do me a favor. I put this property under your name. You know it's not yours. I just did it for protection. I want you to sign it over to me so I can go ahead and sell it. So halacha is, you cannot force the Reish Galusa to do it. Because the Gemara explains that it's not good to have shtaros in your name that you're selling property. Back then, it wasn't very common for people to sell real estate. If people sold a property, it meant they were under distress. That's something which you do not want people rumors going out that you're not solvent or that you're selling off your assets. And therefore, the Reish Galusa can say, I don't want to. By signing this waiver, by signing over this property, I agree it's yours. I'm not trying to take it. You can use it, do whatever you want with it. But you can't force me to sign this document since I'm going to have a loss. Based on this, some of the Paiskim say that if the daughter will have any sort of loss by signing this waiver, and it seems back then there was some sort of hefty that she had, she can say, I'm not willing to sign this waiver. It doesn't look good in the street. It looks like I got into a fight with her. I don't know exactly what the hefty is, but there's some sort of loss by signing the waiver. You can't force, he said, there's no chiyav hashavas aveda. You can't force her to do so. Because like that, you're right. There's no isser of writing a will. We'll talk about avurei achsanta, but there's a way. There's no isser of giving part of the estate to your daughter. The problem is that in the Seder Yerusha says that the moment he dies, it belongs to the sons. Dina Malchus Dina cannot take that away. Cannot override and say we have a different Seder HaYerusha. So that's why as soon as he dies, api halacha belongs to the sons. It's theirs. If they have a problem getting it out, they need her waiver, that's our question. Whether Al Tashavas Aveda, you can force her to sign or not.
If I can put in the condition that the son, maybe you make the condition, the son has to pay $10 million.
Good, we'll get to that. Again, what we're talking about now is when a person does not have a will, there's no tzavo, there's no shtar chatizachar, there's nothing. He dies intestate. We want to know just how to deal with it. When a person writes a will or how to write it to make it enforceable in halacha, That's for another day. But the discussion here is there was no will, everything is locked up in court. Can you force the daughters to sign some sort of waiver? Now the Maisa today, in most cases, it's very hard to really understand why there was a hefsid signing a waiver today. It's one thing for a Reish Galusa to start writing shtaris that he's selling off his properties. That looks bad. Simply a daughter saying that she's waiving her rights to the Yerusha, it's difficult to understand what the hefsid is. Nevertheless, there are many, many Paiskim that say that the daughter is entitled to something. If you can't force her to sign the waiver, they have to negotiate. And I would say most Paiskim say that you can say kimli. She can say, I'm relying on the Paiskim that say I don't have to sign, and you have to give her something. It's not clear exactly how much. There are some Paiskim say you give her one tenth of the share that she would get otherwise, 10% of the chelik the sons get. Other Paiskim say she can hold out for more. She can play hardball. She can just refuse to sign, and they have to, they'll just negotiate until they arrive at some sort of hesgim, some sort of mutual agreement. But to force them to sign is, again, it's a machlokes ha'poskim. It gets a little bit hard to understand why not today, but there are many poskim that say that you cannot force her to sign unless she gets a share. Now, this is only true when you need her waiver. On the other hand, if you have assets that's, you know, they're not in court, they're just metaltalin, which, you know, somehow just disappear without going through the probate system, without going through administration. So there she has absolutely no rights to it. Again, it's only when you need her signature. If it's a situation where you don't need her signature, where if she's passive, you'll be able to get the assets out, then this halacha will not apply. Now, the kuliyamo, this is not a heter for the daughter to go file a lawsuit or to go to court and demanding a share of the estate. This is only when the default, even if she's completely passive, the government knows their daughters, and the government will not allow the estate to be closed until they either get a waiver or until the daughter gets the share. So then we have this discussion. But if she actually does something, she files a lawsuit, or she's the one that creates the problem, then since Api Halacha she didn't have the right to file the lawsuit, she certainly cannot demand now or extort money for some sort of payment for dropping the lawsuit that shouldn't have been filed in the first place. Now, one last point as far as these POD accounts or when they're beneficiaries, there is a discussion in this is true from the Igros Moshe where a person opened an account, and at the time that he opened the account, he wrote that he designated one of his children as a beneficiary. Now, time went on; it was a number of decades later he passed away, and at that point there was a fight among the children, and what the other children claimed was that the father wrote his name not for any good reason. But when he went to the bank, they told him, listen, you're getting older, write down one of your children. So he wrote one of his children. He didn't mean to single out this child over another child. He wasn't playing favorites. He didn't really intend to warp the Yerusha. He wanted everyone to get equally. He had to put down a name, so he put down a name. So the Gris Moshe has an Arichus back and forth. And at the end of the tshuva, he ends up saying that they should make a pshara. Because the pashtus was the father did not intend to give it as a matana. He just wrote it because he was told to write something. But Igros Moshe at the end of the day says that a pshara should be made. In other cases, in other words, if it's clear that the person's intent was taka to give it to the beneficiary, then that's fine. If you're dealing with a situation where it's not clear, or you're afraid that achamei of the esrim, there'll be a dispute and people will claim that it was just done for convenience. The parent didn't really intend to give it to the child. It's kedai to at least make it clear in your will or make it clear in a tzava that the beneficiaries are really intended to be beneficiaries, and that should not go into the regular cheshbonos of Yerusha.
You have to say explicitly, I'm overriding whatever it says. You have a will. It says I'm splitting everything equally or something like that.
Technically, the way we're saying is that this does not go into the will because it does not go into the Seder HaYerusha. So if you write a tzava that everything else should be split equally, that would be a separate cheshbon. But if your intent is for that to be included in his share, that's something which you should specify in whatever tzava you're writing. Now, just go through a few quick other halachas about the Seder HaYerusha. We mentioned before that children are yarshin their parents. The halacha is that a children will yarshin even if they are children that were born be'isser. A mamzer has the same rights of Yerusha as a kosher. If a person has children from different marriages, they all have equal rights to Yerusha. You don't go by the first, not by the last. They're all the sons are going to be dealt with equally. Adopted children. What? No, you can only have one, by the father. For the father, not the mother. Now, adopted children are not yarshim. If a person has adopted children, he wants to provide for them, he has to make a tzava. That's something but in the absence of that, they're not yarshim, they're not relatives, they do not have a din yerusha. Now, one last halacha. This is a bit of an interesting halacha. It's a bit controversial. But yerusha is on assets. Person owns a house, the person's owed money. an asset. Roy, Muchzik, doesn't make a difference. They all go Birushim. The Ramah has a chiddush. He says that Toivas Hana or Dvarim Shein Bahem Mamish do not go Birushim. Now his case is, he's coming from Mordechai, a person who was Magdish money, and he basically, what he said was, this money, he made a foundation, and all the income of this foundation is going to go to Tzedakah. He gave it over to someone to manage the money, and then he passed away. Or actually, the case is even before he passed away, at some point he wanted the money back. The person who was managing the foundation said, no, I'm not giving it back to you. I'm managing it. I'm giving out the money. I'm not returning it. Now, in a case like that, who owns the money in such a foundation? Now, it's not the donor. The donor gave it away. Whenever a person separates money for tzedakah, a person separates ma'aser, so who owns his ma'aser money? Is it his? It's not his. He can't use it. He can't spend it. Ma'aser money or tzedakah money belongs to aniyim. It belongs to tzedakah hasheva. Now, if it's your tzedakah money, you have the toivas hana. That means you have the right to decide which ani to give it to. Everyone has their own favorite causes. Everyone has their aniyim, so they can choose who to give it to. That's called toivas hana. So the money belongs to aniyim collectively. The donor, the person who is mafresh it, has the toivas hana. He has the right to direct it. Zavta Mordechai, toivas hana, we paskin, is not considered mamon. And therefore, if a person dies, if he has a foundation, if he has money that was set aside for tzedakah, the halacha is that right, that toivas hana, does not go birusha. So based on this, the tzoyis paskins from the shloah, a person separates tzedakah money. So while he's alive, he gives it out slowly because he has a toivas hana. He gives it to whoever he wants. The moment he passes away, the shloah says the yarshim have to give it to the first ani they meet because it's not their money; it's tzedakah money. The father had a toivas hana. He had the right to direct it to who he chose. Toivas hana is not a tangible thing that can pass birusha, and therefore the shloah paskins that is the first ani that the yarshim bump into, it comes into during Menachem Avil, during the shiva, he gets the whole bank account. You have no right to hold it back. Now the tzoyis says, takes this further. He says, based on this, he has a problem. Let's say a person gives money to a Temchei Shabbos. So you give it to Temchei Shabbos, there's a gabbai. The gabbai gives it out. Who has the toivas hana of that money? What gives the gabbai the right to choose who to give it to? So the tzoyis says, he starts off by saying it, must be that the person whose money it is, when he gave away the money, he also gave the gabbai the toivas hana, and that's why he gets to choose who to give it to. But it will come out then, if the person dies, even though the money has already been in someone else's hands, already by Temchei Shabbos, the moment the person dies, the Toivas Hana is gone. And now Temchei Shabbos is a chiyuv to give out that money to the first person they meet. Toivas Hana, the same way you don't Yarshin, many of the places say you can't give it away. It's not a chayv. It's not. You can give. It's something. It's like it's not mamon. It's not. It's like an ein by mamish, and it could be you can't give it away. Correct. If an ani comes and takes it, once there's no toivas hana, anyone can come and take it. 100%. Correct. Any ani can take it. There's a discussion whether another person can take it to give it out to who to give it out to his ani. But you know, but in a chami, if an ani wants to grab it, he'll be able to. So the tzais wants tzais suggests first that if the donor passes away, then the gabbai loses his toivas hana. Then he ends up saying no. He says the gabbai has the toivas hana. The reason why a gabbai can choose who to give it to is not because he has toivas hana. The gabbai can choose who to give it to because the gabbai is a shliach of all the aniyim, and all the aniyim collectively they realize there has to be some sort of seder hadvarim. Someone has to be in charge, so they remind him as a representative of all the aniyim to give it out as appropriate. So if that's the case, his right doesn't come from the toivas hana of the donor. His right comes from the aniyim. Therefore, even if the donor passes away, he still has the right to distribute it the way he normally does. But based on this halacha, this Marsham has a case where a person it was a factory that he had the exclusive rights to buy all of their waste, and he reprocessed it. That wasn't the contract, but it was a question of Asagos Gavol. He was the one that came up with the idea. He's the one that was doing it for many years. And the case was, Al Pi Halacha, no one was allowed to come and compete with him. He passed away, and his daughter claimed the same right. So Zakta Marsha, I'm nothing doing. This right is not a Yizkos Mamon. You don't own anything. It's an intangible to Taiva Sano. And therefore, although the father may have had that right, that no one could compete with him, since it's not a real, it's not an ownership, it's not a davarship of mamon, it's a name by mamish, it's a tevasa, no, he says, in such that will not pass to the yarshim, and therefore once the father passes away, anyone can come and compete with the daughter in the same business. What? Okay, that's, they do discuss avir, but we're just one last, one. I'll end up with one last question. There was a situation where there was a foundation that lent money to an ani. And there was a machlokes, there was a whole dispute about whether the ani had to pay it back. Now, yesh ladon, in such a case, where if the money was really tzedakah money, that means no one owes the money anymore. It's just a teivas ano. If an ani would be teivas money, where there's only a teivas ano, just like if an ani comes and grabs, if a levi comes and grabs meiser, or if a kohen comes and grabs truma. So although l'chachil yav ha-teves hano, once he grabs it, it's his, you can't take it away. So if a person separates money to tztaka money in a foundation, and it's real tztaka money, yesh ladin, I don't know if you can ever claim a loan back. Because if the ani says, I'm keeping this money for myself, the only thing the foundation has is teves hano, I don't know what rights they have to be goyvet. Now, there is a concept of a gemach, so there must be some reason why this is not true halacha, because a gemach can't operate if every time you give money, the person could just be taifizit, but tzarechin, I don't know what the pshat is.